You'll be glad to hear us when we take an hour and a half. Joking. As Hugh Smith, our former party president, the late Hugh Smith, used to say, I'll be brief. And that usually meant he was going to speak for about an hour. Anyway, conference guests, ladies and gentlemen, can I firstly pass on my appreciation to the panel guests and speakers for what was a highly robust and very enlightening discussion. The Chief Constable George Hamilton, Mr. Jude Wade, Epic Director Tom Roberts, Professor Kieran McAvoy, and our facilitator Malachy O'Donnell. O'Doherty. And I'd like to give my thanks to our Director of Communications for his input into this. I think we have all heard something this morning which can enhance our understanding of what I am certain will be a defining issue in the years to come. And thank you also, Conference. This is the fifth time I've stood before you as leader of the party. It has been challenging, personally and collectively, but I think we have moved forward together, embracing those challenges and forging ahead in the right direction. I can see some new faces, testament to an influx in the membership that has broadened the party in capacity, geography and outlook, and of course I'm glad to note that not so new faces who have steadfastly remained the backbone of this party through our inevitable ups and downs. It is good to be here in North Down, especially as we have had a resurgence of party activism in this area. At our previous height, the party had two councillors here, and I firmly believe that we stand on the cusp of reclaiming that position. Indeed, I am confident that in the years to come, we can surpass our previous victories and continue to deliver for the people of North Down as we have and will continue to do elsewhere. So, Conference, where do we find ourselves? Last year I stood before you as a time ticked by on what was to become the Stormtist Agreement, rehashed from the Richard Haass efforts the year before. Flags, parades in the past had been joined by welfare reform and overall suitability of the institutions. A full agenda crying out for imagination from our ambivalent government. Gladly the march of the progress has dealt swiftly with those issues, and we are the better for it, or maybe not. So the calendar may have changed, but those issues remain unresolved, and with the lack of accomplishment, so dissolved any residual confidence left in the institutions. Disillusionment with the process is now firmly in the mainstream. Last year's key issues stubbornly remain. Indeed, now we have the addition of Republican murder on the streets, the continued existence of the IRA, the NAMA debacle, a hokey-cokey executive, and all is underpinned by obvious lack of confidence that our governing parties can adequately address any of the above. Last year I cautioned that there appeared to be genuine desire to deal with the matters at hand. How could there be when loyalists looked on from the sidelines, whilst issues like legacy and parades were discussed behind closed doors? It is clear to us all that any workable resolution to these deeply divisive issues would require loyalist buy-in and delivery. Our lack of inclusion, we can only conclude therefore, is reflective on the other parties' lack of desire to succeed. What we have had then, and what continues to this day, is the politics of the wheelbarrow. Everything gets pushed ahead, just out of reach, but blocking the way forward. But as long as issues are heaved beyond the next election, the executive parties are satisfied and mandates are renewed. What we need, what the long-suffering and justifiable frustrated people of this country need, is genuine, honest approach to dealing with the issues. We have just heard a debate on legacy, about the past, victims and the impact of it all may have on our ability as a society to positively face the future. This is too important a topic to be used for politicking. I could submit a proposal that aims to address every loyalist bugbear in the process. I could outline an agenda where loyalists selfishly structure an approach to the past that suits our needs above all else. But that would not serve society nor enrich the common good. So our stated position is an honest one and is well rehearsed. We believe none of the parties are in a position to drive the process of reconciliation or set the framework for dealing with legacy issues. Each of us, to a greater or lesser degree, have contributed to division
and an approach to legacy issues that depends on party political objectives is destined to fail the people who need it most. But that is what we have at present. A process where victims are used as chess pieces, well, that shamelessly to score points in the past, their expectations cruelly raised, only to be doused, and when they have outlived their electoral uselessness, and both sides are guilty of this. Sinn Féin, by their revisionist attempt to shirk any culpable for the conflict, seek from the process a better past for themselves at the expense of a better future for us all. The relentless caucus of Republican satellite groups, whose myopia sees only on the state and so-called collusion, follow an agenda aimed at justice, but on retrospect justification of the IRA for its resulting windfall to Sinn Féin's southern electoral fortunes. On the other side, unionist politicians are making commitments they simply can't keep, promising justice where none may be achievable. Political parties need to be honest about their motivations and realistic about expectations when dealing with legacy issues. The HET trolls somewhere in the region of 1,600 cold cases, and while it's heavily resourced and heavily financed, achieved just 4 convictions. How hopeful should any victim be for their day in court when HIU assumes the remit of the HET, albeit with less manpower, a fraction of its funding, and if we are to raise fragile expectations and destabilise this not yet stable political firmament? What value can truly be seen in this proposed changes? And I fear, confidence, that loyalism may once again become the whipping boys of the process. The Sinn Féin created industry aimed at undermining the state role in conflict will come face to face with the state agencies, keen to protect what it feels national interest, and loyalists isolated again will pay the heaviest price, effectively shouldering the blame for a conflict our community neither wanted nor deserved. And confidence, I say without paranoia, because time and again it has been supported by the facts, and I have no doubt that we will see evidence of it again this week. Again with the forthcoming report on paramilitary activity. 2 Republican murders involved in a direct link to a party in government have contributed to the current political process, but you can rest assured that the report on paramilitary activity will concentrate every bit as much on loyalism. The purported actions of loyalists will offer cloud cover to fuse the focus on Sinn Féin and serve as a fig leaf covering the DUP's apparently robust position on sharing government with Republicans. Because let's be honest, we had to endure the feigned shock of politicians, journalists and commentators to this supposed revelation that the IRA are still in existence and are heavily involved in crime. It was no surprise to me, nor I'm sure anyone here. The surprise for me has been the willful ignorance of those who heard no evil, saw no evil, and obviously reported no evil for so long. And that position is in stark contrast to the treatment of loyalists, criminalised at every turn, subject to a constant torrent of abuse, dehumanised and marginalised. And what are the facts? Notwithstanding previous headline events, like an Ireland bank raid, the most senior leaders of the IRA have been charged and convicted of criminal acts, conservatively valued at hundreds of millions of pounds. The evasion of excise duty, mortgage fraud, profit from illegal waste, international criminal money laundering conspiracy, the list is long, varied, and at very high value. But the Charter and Clauses view of republicanism is unchanged. Republicans aren't involved in crime, and the butterflies have all flown away. The logical fallacy proffered by Sinn Féin and the IRA don't exist, so the IRA's action can't then be of the IRA. Surely has now been the fatal authority exposed. Contrast that to the constant flow of low-level crime, tittle-tattle and innuendo thrown at loyalism, and the result is that, despite the facts, the official line sees loyalism and crime as synonymous, while republicanism and crime remain alien concepts. Confidence, we are realists, and simply going away has never ever been a realistic option. The process of transforming this conflict was never going to be an event, and always destined to be a process. And processes move incrementally, depending on mood, opportunity, and circumstances. In fits and starts, but we have witnessed a very lopsided attempt to help navigate this process to successful conclusions. Republicans have been cheerled by three governments, a judicial system, the police, and a compliant media, each eager to ensure their version of the process remains on track. Yet lawyers have been criminalised, the primary focus of the police, the HET, and a supergrass system readily discredited but resurrected from its demise in the 80s. The actions of the state and its agencies a bitter impediment to lawless transformation at each and every turn. Like much else, if we are to address continuing existence of power motives, we need to do so with honesty and integrity. We need to do so by recognising the problem and potentially by collectively delivering a genuine and structured demobilisation plan. I have no doubt that lawless would positively engage with such a plan. I am heartened to see the good work of lawyers, former combatants, the activists adding value to our communities on a daily basis. Through groups like ACT, Northern Ireland Alternatives and EPIC, the process of transformation and reintegration is being pursued with sincerity, energy and vision. From the Brooke ceasefire in 1981 to the present day, lawyerism has shown leadership and freely taken the steps necessary for the greater good. And the utmost faith that in the very near future, loyalism can rely upon to rise again to this challenge. But all of those issues occupy the political arena. Everyday politics is oil for shales, and it is the people who suffer most from the resulting political stalemate. As Sinn Féin play their cross-border bluff with welfare reform, the penalties go up and the people suffer. As the DUP play revolving ministers, key decisions are missed and the people suffer. As inept ministers preside over chaotic departments, public finances are squandered and ultimately the people suffer. These are not new issues or recent problems. Again, we have reported this week shocking levels of educational underachievement, especially amongst working class Protestant pupils. For over 20 years, this party has been pointing out the problem and offering our thoughts and solutions. But solutions need resource, challenges need face, visions need shown, and we seem to be lacking all of the above. My colleague John Kane spearheaded a report into this very problem a few months ago and delivered a plan and a very concrete proposals aimed at tackling this hope and aspiration limiting obstacle for our young people. Clear and sensible policies that would expand early years empowerment, incentivise teaching excellence, and finally address the milestones issues of academic selection. Much of this is neither prohibitively expensive nor politically contentious, but the inaction that is meted is letting generations of our young people down and conspiring their potential to chance. Things cannot continue like this. The future is too valuable, a commodity to be left in the hands of those whose focus lies in government and not in governing. Last year at conference, I submitted this party's support for a new system of government, a move by the Assembly toward voluntary coalition. Today I renew that call. We need change, we need the system shaken up and formed in the image of successful institutions where delivery is the rule, not the exception. Almost 40 years ago, we formulated a policy of sharing responsibility. We envisaged a system of government where our traditional divisions could be recognised, but where there would not be entrenched into a system of government that created ministerial fiefdoms and executive hegemony, where government business would be scrutinised by a departmental committee headed by a chair who would reflect rather than preside. A system of government much like that successfully operated for decades in councils across the province. Today we remain convinced that by sharing responsibility we could have avoided many of the pitfalls seen with the selfish division of power. The institutions envisaged in the Belfast Agreement were a compromise. agreed at a time and place when a honourable outcome was needed and stability was demanded. But that system was never designed to last forever. It was a temporary measure to deal with a contemporary problem, and just like the devolution of justice or an extension of fiscal responsibility, the institutions always had the capacity to mature for best practice. So in the context of the Executive Party talks ongoing, we again propose that full consideration be given to a voluntary coalition, scrutinised by an official opposition. Confidence in the institutions is at a depressing low and without change. Stormont risks moving from a crisis of confidence to a crisis of legitimacy. We need an executive working towards a clear and previously agreed programme for government, entering into government as a manifesto commitment, not a default reaction to keep someone else out. We need government where coalition works for the common good, not for your good, then my good, then yours again, until it stalls and hits crisis as usual. And we need an official opposition to scrutinise the work of the executive with speaking rights and resources on par with that afforded the departments it hopes to review. And of course, we accept the need to protect minority rights, and the system of weighted majority voting can reconcile that historic challenge. Conference. The current round of talks provides an opportunity for the executive parties to make a big decision, but one that would engender stability in the government and reclaim some of the confidence lost by inaction, confusion and ineptitude. And conference, when I speak of the Assembly, I do so in the understanding that this party will soon return to it. We are still growing, signing new members every week, developing new branches, spearheading new campaigns. This is an energy about this party that is self-fulfilling and that we must tap into if we are to move to bigger and better things. I must say that it is with some regret that we didn't stand in May's general elections, and I'm sure some might say the party assessed that as a weakness on our part. I would argue, however, that it was a sign of strength. We are charting a path with clear goals in our immediate focus and strategic objectives beyond. Prior to the 2014 council elections, we identified the 2016 assembly elections as the most valuable opportunity available to propel the success of the party. This year was made a choice to forego that would have largely been a distraction for a total focus of effort and resources on the assembly next year, and the reluctant boost in the party machinery that could bring. And I say that not because we yearn for the spoils of office, what we yearn for are the resources to deliver more help to more of our community. We yearn for more access to levers of power that remain out of our reach to the marginalised and the dispossessed. We yearn to have the loyalist voice back in the Assembly, the loyalist people represented in the highest chambers. We yearn for the day when all our communities can be at the table, crafting a vision for the future, not subject to the afterthoughts of someone else's. For it is now clear that those elected to represent our communities have no respect for the privilege of elected office or the duty of public service. Creative element will not cut waitlessness, fight educational underachievement, or develop our necessary infrastructure. It is clear now, after 17 years of devolved government, that the DUP and the UUP are not prepared or equipped to offer our communities the representation they deserve on demand. It is clear now that we must assume the responsibility ourselves. So we need to leave this conference renewed and revigorated. We need to spell out our vision for a future of hope and a future of change. We need to re-enfranchise those who feel left behind by politics and politicians, and spell out how things could be different and how we would be different. Conference, we have within us the vision and the capacity to bring real and meaningful change to our communities, but only if we commit wholeheartedly to doing this. So let's do that today. Let's leave this conference with our focus redefined, our energy recharged. Let's recommit to the vision of hope and justice and community that underpins the charter of our party. Conference, by moving forward together and by putting people first, we can and will force the change of our people so desperately desire. Thank you very much.